we've got arguably the top portfolio, collective portfolio in it. Like, I don't think that there's even a close second as a collective portfolio in the U.S.
No.
The amount of number one revenue properties we have that continues to grow in, I don't even know how many it is at this stage. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday with my main man, Jake Sheehy.
Yes, sir.
First one of the new year,
yes, sir.
2026, hitting it hard.
Yes, sir.
Getting going.
Man,
everybody's
so
fired
excited.
Up this time of year. The holidays are behind us. Many people started talking about what the big plans for what they have in 2026. So how are we going to kick it off? What are we going to talk about?
Man,
what do we got going?
Okay, well, this is the thought process. We're thinking all these people have resolutions, right?
Okay.
And they're probably shopping around. They're thinking, man, I really want to get into that short-term rental stuff. I saw it all through 2025. I really want to get into it. Maybe they're shopping around for different coaches. Maybe they're listening to different podcasts. So I wanted to start out the year with the intention of what makes Vodacy different than other programs. What do we teach and why do we feel like this is important for you to have? Especially, I mean, we've talked about this before. 2026, I strongly believe this is going to be the year of separation, right? I think the gap, you know, we talked about this is widening. And so I wanted to hit on that just a little bit about how, man, if some people are doing co-hosting or they're doing arbitrage or if they do what we do and teach the ownership model, how that's going to outpace other people. And man, you think so, right? The 2026 is the year of separation,
absolutely.
Huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's just going to...
I think the gap between the haves and the have-nots in the short-term rental space is going to widen. It's been widening. I think it's widening faster. And I think part of it widening faster is there's more people willing to do what it takes to operate at the top of the market. That is a very uncrowded space, if you will, right? The very tops of these markets is kind of uncharted territory. It's not something that a lot of people have wanted to bite off and do what it is necessary to operate in the top of these markets. We're seeing more people willing to do that. And when we see more people willing to do that, the consumer is overwhelmingly choosing those properties above and beyond the middle of the road properties. And so that gap on the top side, everybody at the top is raising the bar. It's a good thing. I like seeing more people jump in the top of these markets. It's why we do what we do. We understand the benefits of more and more people operating in the top of the market because that bar continues to rise. The consumer gets used to spending more money and they're saying, hey, listen, now that I've even got choices here at the top of the market, I'm willing to dump my money in here. And so what's happening is you're leaving the middle and the bottom of the market behind, right? And it becomes a very difficult game to make any money, especially at current interest rates, current prices. And so you're seeing that gap, that success gap, if you will, between the top and the middle of the market. In my opinion, it's been widening. I actually think 2026 is going to be one of those years where it's going to be the people who are very intentional are going to have a really fun time in short-term rentals. The other people who are saying, hey, listen, I think I know what I'm doing here. You know, this isn't rocket science. I'll go figure this out on my own. And they're kind of in the middle of that market. Very nice properties many times, look like model homes, and they can't figure out why they're not making money. They're going to not have a lot of fun this year, right?
I love it. So I want to touch on why we think this gap is happening and why are people more willing to spend money on their properties to reach that top of the market. We believe, I would say so, it's the ownership model. These people own these properties, right?
Yeah.
I want to talk about the difference between ownership, co-hosting, and arbitrage, just to kind of set the stage for where we're about to go into for the listeners here. I want to give a short and sweet definition for both of these. Co-hosting. Okay, this is a business model where you manage and operate someone else's short-term rental in exchange for a percentage of the revenue. You do not own the property. Arbitrage, I'm sure you guys have heard about this before. It's a model where you rent a property long-term and then you sublease it as a short-term rental for a profit. Once again, you do not own these properties. So I want to touch on what we teach, the ownership model. And I want to ask you, why is this one so special? Let's dive into this.
Yeah. And you mentioned a few things like in the very beginning, like why are we different? What's different about Vodacy? One, we are 100% bought into the ownership model. That's what we believe. It's how we operate. Mm-hmm. It's what we teach, you know, and a lot of people, if you're brand new to investing in general and you see a lot of stuff about, hey, you know, go invest in Airbnbs, go invest in short-term rentals, how to make money without owning properties, without having this big, you know, upfront cost to do so. Those are arbitrage co-hosting models. Those are business opportunities. Mm-hmm. You're basically being a management partner, or you're an arbitrage person where you're saying, hey, I'm going to lease and then sublease out. I don't own those properties. The reason it is very difficult mm-hmm. nowadays, especially to make much money in those models, especially the arbitrage model. I think the arbitrage mm-hmm. model is the worst of the two models, because you don't have an owner that is, they're leasing the property to you. They're saying, hey, listen, I want a monthly payment. I don't want anything with this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to lease the property to you. I'm going to pay somebody else is paying my mortgage, which is great for mm-hmm. them as an owner. You're paying down their mortgage. They're getting the appreciation, the tax benefits, everything else. You have a commitment to pay a monthly fee. And then your goal is to say, hey, if my monthly fee that I'm paying them on a rent basis is $2,000 a month, and anything above and beyond $2,000 a month, I put in my pocket as profit, right? Mm. So they say, I'm going to short-term rent it. I'm going to put that money in my pocket. We just talked about the gap widening. One of the biggest reasons it's widening is because the people who understand how to operate at the top are investing heavily into these properties to create unique, amazing experiences for the guest, right? Mm. And so it's not just having a good property in a good area that is furnished nicely. And when you're arbitraging, are you really going to go drop, $100,000, $150,000 on a resort style backyard? Are you going to put the amenities it needs in something that you don't actually own?
Right.
Right. And so the answer is usually probably not. And so when the answer is no, I'm not willing to do that, then you say, okay, how am I going to compete with those people who are willing to do that? Right. Because the owner is willing to do that, because we don't just have, there's four major levers in real estate and everybody acts like they made it up. Like I'm hearing them called different things across the board. Mm. But the reality is there's four returns you get on real estate, period. Every real estate deal, whether it's short-term rentals, long-term rentals, commercial properties, multifamily properties, whatever it is, you're looking at the cash flow of the deal. You're looking at the appreciation of the deal. You're looking at the note pay down of the deal. And you're looking at the tax advantages of the deal, right? The four major returns you get when you're looking and calculating your internal rate of return. When you're looking at the returns you're getting in these ownership or non-ownership models, you don't get the benefits of note pay down. You don't get the benefits of appreciation, and you don't get the benefits of tax advantages because you don't own the property. So you only have one of the four levers. And long term, normally cash flow is the lowest common denominator when it comes to calculating your internal rate of return. And so these models are side hustles at best, right? And I shouldn't say at best. That's not fair to say. There is the second model, especially, there's money to be made here, but these are business models where you're going out and saying, hey, listen, I am going to be the management partner on this deal. I'm going to make either the arbitrage between what I'm paying and what I'm able to rent it out for, and or the co-hosting model, which I think is a much better model if you're going to run down more of a biz op type of model, where you team up with owners, where you become their management partner, right? We talk about, I don't manage my own properties.
Right.
I hire professional managers. Well, recently, because of the rise in popularity of co-hosting, a couple of my properties, I have co-host on them because they act as my management partner. And so if I am a co-host, I'm going to be very, very diligent about making sure that at least I'm partnering with owners who are willing to invest in the property to what is necessary to operate toward the top of the market, right? Because if you do so, then your potential for cash flow is much higher. And now you still don't get the appreciation. You still don't get the note pay down. You still don't get the tax advantages because you're not an owner of that property. But if you partner with an owner that is willing to invest, because you're not going to probably, right? You're not going to be motivated to spend X amount of money to create this amazing experience on something you don't own, right? It's easy to invest in something we own because we have the benefits of it.
So the
co-hosting model can work for people, but understand it's a business model. It's no different than saying, hey, I'm going to open up a window cleaning company and I'm going to work this window cleaning company. I'm going to make money, right? You're opening up a short-term rental management company, essentially. Now, you're not an investor. When you co-host a property, you're not an investor in those properties unless you start to put money in and you have some ownership of it. Now, if you're able to do that and you partner and you're able to get some equity ownership, great, right? But that's not what most of those models are. Most of those models are saying, and I would choosing the two, there is one that is hugely beneficial. One, on the arbitrage model, you're obligated to that lease payment regardless, and then you get the upside on the difference between what you pay and what you're renting it out for.
Right.
You have to furnish it. You have to, you know, pay that monthly payment on the lease and everything. And so you've got a long-term lease that you've signed. Good or bad, you're in that game. And you're probably not going to be motivated to dump a bunch of money into amenities, experience, everything else to really bring that property to life on something you don't own. And so your upside is limited, right? And so on the co-hosting model, you get the choice to choose who you are co-hosting with. And you can choose owners like us. We use co-hosts on the management side. And I am willing to invest into the properties to set them up to operate at the top of the market. That's hugely beneficial to a co-host. And so as a co-host, you also don't have a big monthly commitment on a lease payment, right? You're saying, hey, listen, I'm going to partner with you, Sean, on a property you own. I don't pay you anything every month. And you only pay me by when the property's rented out and it's performing and everything else. So I don't have any fixed expenses. You don't have any fixed expenses. And it's kind of a revenue share, if you will, on the back end on the cash flow, right? And so can be a really good model. It's just a management model. So call it what it is. And don't be confused if you're saying, hey, listen, you know, you can invest like all these ads that say on Instagram that say invest in properties without owning them, invest in properties with no money down, and you don't have to do anything, and you can get all the benefits and all the upside of this Airbnb game. You get one of the four upsides. And on a 3, 5, 10 year time horizon, that's not, you know, it's not an investment into properties, right? You're not getting that upside potential of appreciation, note pay down, and tax advantages. You waive that when you don't own these properties. You get the advantages of a rev share on cash flow or revenue, top line revenue, right? A lot of the co-hosts are taking a percentage of top line revenue, which can be a good business model, right? If that's the business you want to get in. It's not an investment model.
Man, the way you were talking about that, I'm really like, I need you to correct me if I'm wrong here in saying this, but I'm questioning things now. When it comes to the co-hosting or the arbitrage models, I'm currently thinking that seems like it takes a lot more time. If a high income earner or a person that's willing to do this and they're debating on what they want to do, you can either take on a second job of being a property manager and co-hosting. Or you can, yes, it will be take time at the front end. I'm not denying that. You're going to do these things. You're going to learn the stuff. It's going to take time, but it doesn't seem like as long of a or as much of a work to put on your plate. This is the one first thing I'm curious about. And the second thing I'm curious about is the acceleration of co-hosting and arbitrage. If you don't get to pull those other three levers, it seems like you wouldn't be able to get multiple properties quicker. Am I wrong in thinking that?
Well, one, let's go back to the time first, right? Yeah. Okay. It's you're committing to a business, a second job, or a full-time job. Some people, we've got members in our group that are full-time co-hosts, and they basically started as co-hosts and then they become full-time property managers, right?
Right.
They continue to add properties to their portfolio. But they're also realizing that, holy crap, I better start owning these properties as well. So I need to be buying a property or two every single year along with it. But that's what they do. They're in the game, and their job is managing properties, right? That's what a co-host or an arbitrage person, their job is going to be that. So yeah,
okay.
If you need to have the time to do that.
Right.
Front end, a real estate short-term rental investing is very front end loaded when it comes to money and time. Right. And so when you remove some of the money investment when you go down the co-hosting or arbitrage model, but you, again, those other levers, now you can add properties to your co-hosting portfolio, go find other owners in that area. You know, management is very, you know, just in your head in you know, the way that I look at co-hosts, you're property manager. And so you're building a property management business, you know, and so now, there are a lot of states you have to be licensed to manage other people's properties.
Oh, wow.
So that's where co-hosting becomes popular, right? It's like, okay, how can I help do this? And I become a co-host with you where I'm not really a licensed property manager. Many states you have to have a real estate license to manage other people's properties. And so there's ways to navigate that. So I understand when somebody says, well, I can't be a property manager. You're doing property management services for an owner. Right.
So
let's assume, like, just for the sake of the conversation, you're doing property management skill sets and services, mm-hmm. right? So you have to have the time to do that, the knowledge to do that, the experience to do that. So you can partner with owners like us that don't want to manage our properties. And we're willing to give you a rev share based on your performance on, you know, basically managing our properties for us. Mm. And so, and ultimately the time you're saying, hey, do I have time to do that? I mean, that's a, that can be a full-time right. job. It can turn into a full-time job,
right?
Depending on how many properties you have. And so we, you have to decide, is that what I want to run down the road and do? Or do I want to say, hey, listen, I'm a high income earner. I'm working a job. What I'm trying to do is capitalize on my active income, put it into other places to build some passive income. Mm. And short-term rentals happen to be maybe something that I'm interested in doing. Mm. Well, the drawbacks of short-term rental investing is they're very intense on the front end when it comes to time and when it comes to money. And so even if you understand creative financing, and we've talked about this before, and you're buying no money down deals and you're not having to, you know, you're negotiating with the seller for seller financing, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Even with that being said, you're still investing into getting this property set up.
Right.
You're still investing into create this amazing experience that costs money. And so you've got, that's a drawback, right? Mm-hmm. It keeps people out of succeeding in this game, unfortunately, is it can be capital intensive on right. the front end, and it can be short-lived, but very time intensive. If you're, you know, you're learning a new skill set, you're saying, hey, listen, it's kind of like a sprint. I'm going down and I'm going to put a lot of effort and time understanding this, getting this thing set up. Mm-hmm. Once it's launched and once we start to add it to our portfolio and somebody else is managing it becomes almost zero time invested. Right. It becomes a passive investment, but it's not, it's very active in the very beginning.
Mm. Wow. Okay. Now I kind of want to touch on another word, control here. And when you were talking about, you know, arbitrage, and say you're leasing it out, and now you have to pay that. And maybe you're co-hosting, so you're the property manager for the sake of the conversation. How much control is there when it comes to nightly rates? I'm curious on that. Like, if you own the property, then you can, you know, you can go up, you can down, you can play around with it, you can find the what works best for you and your occupancy and all these things. But if you're in these other positions, how much control do you have of that?
It depends on your contracts, right? On the arbitrage model, you really have full control, right?
Because you're
saying, hey, listen, I'm going to pay you $2,000 a month, uh-huh. and then I'm subleasing on the back end. You have no. You know, I have an obligation to pay you $2,000 a month for my lease.
Okay.
Beyond that, you're not saying anything. I mean, you do need to get permission to sublease it back out on a short-term rental. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, you're going to have full control.
Okay.
On the co-hosting side, it depends on what you negotiate with the seller, right? Uh-huh. Or the owner of the property. The owner of the property and you have a relationship where you are now a co-host with that owner. And usually you're going to be, your co-hosting responsibilities comes down to management. And a lot of times management comes down to pricing, but a lot of owners want to have a say in price. Mm-hmm. And so it's, what are you negotiating? How are you navigating that? And that's no different than navigating just that relationship of who does what, who has the say on everything. Mm-hmm. Most of the time we suggest as an owner that I want to have some say on my minimum pricing. I want to have some say on my strategy, but I don't want to micromanage it. And I want my co-host to implement the strategy that we want in place. Mm. Well, we have those conversations on the front end before anybody's ever engaged or hired or partnered with.
Mm. Okay. I want to now circle back to kind of the beginning of the conversation. We talked about 2026 is the year of separation, the haves and the have nots. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but one of these reasons is delivering a unique and personalized experience. So we're going to touch on design now. I want to touch on why is this so important, especially with the ownership model, how it allows you to outpace people that are maybe co-hosting a property or, you know, have a property that's in arbitrage. I'm arbitraging a property. I don't know either. Okay. So I want to hit on design. We talk about this all the time, but why is it really useful for the ownership model?
Because just like I said, you're investing in these properties,
right?
And as an owner, there's things that I can do value add to the property. I'm actually increasing the value of the property on certain things that I'm adding, certain amenities that I add, right? But then also this design that is really creating these unique experiences, you have to go about this very strategically because it's not just, so what we're seeing and what we're finding, and go look in Orlando is a great example of this. Like, you pull up properties in Orlando and you'll see these properties featured with these crazy rooms. And what will happen is, these owners are going in and they're doing all this construction and creating this amazing experience, but what they're doing is blowing an entire design budget on one or two rooms in a seven or eight bedroom house. And so they feature this crazy bedroom that's all these built-ins and everything else, or a crazy theater room that has all these built-ins, or a game room or something that looks just amazing. And then all of a sudden you go to the rest of the house and you're like, man, I don't think I'm in the right house because I just went to this bland model home. Right. And so one, strategically, that is, in my opinion, not the best the best thing to do, right? You need to be able to say, hey, how can I bring and create a cohesive, unique experience across the board? You looking at someone?
I'm looking at this one right here. I mean, we got this one beautiful picture. I mean, that's an awesome room. You know, it's got some cool stuff. The rest of the house is bland.
That's exactly what you just said right here. And this is where we've been talking about, you got to go create these unique experiences, these immersive experiences, and we use this custom artwork, and we do all this. We don't do it in one room.
Right.
You've got to bring it to the whole house, right? You've got to be able to do this. To where, because many of these houses are multiple bedrooms, they're multi-generational families coming together, there's people that are splitting the deal. Well, who gets the good room and everybody else has a crappy room? Are they going to pay more for the good room?
Right.
You have to have an equitable experience throughout the property. And I don't know why this has become something that is a deal. I would tell people, listen, you've got to have a budget to create these immersive experiences, but you've got to be able to do it on the whole property.
Right.
Yeah. And if you can't, you got to revisit why and what's going on. And here's the other thing. It is what we're really trying to do is say, okay, I'm an investor. Mm. I've got to get a return on this investment, right? And so it's easy to tell somebody, go put in a pool, go buy a sauna, go buy a hot tub. Oh, you need a pickleball court. Oh, you need to do this resort style backyard. Oh, you need this crazy theater room or game room, and you have to do all this stuff. And all of a sudden they turn around and they've got a $300,000 budget to put this all together based on what somebody's telling them to do. That's really easy to do. Go spend all this money, create this crazy experience, and you're going to be making money. Well, you're going to be attracting customers and you're going to be getting bookings, but that doesn't mean you're getting a good return on what you just did in that property. And so there are very nuances to this. Like, it's easy to talk about. It's easy to say. It's easy to suggest. I can't tell you how often we look at properties and I do audits on properties all the time and say, okay, here's what somebody's told us to do. Here's the budget they're telling me that we need to have. And we look at it and say, why would you do that? You're going to spend, for example, I just looked at one. They're going to spend $250,000 to jump about $25,000 a year in revenue. That's a 10-year payback.
What?
By 10 years, half the shit they did is going to be needed to be redone anyways. So they're not even getting a return on that investment. So is it true their revenue is going to jump? Is it true that they were going to go up to a better position in the market, even closer to the top of the market? Yes. But could they have done that with less than the 250? That's the goal. Say, hey, if I'm going to get a $25,000 jump, I need to see, can I do that by investing $25,000, $40,000, $50,000 maybe to be able to do that? Not 250, right? And so what we're seeing across the board right now is a lot of these people are making these suggestions. They're going to these companies that do these amazing, and there's nothing wrong with the, like, I've seen some like amazing backyards. I've seen amazing theater rooms and things like that, but they're so expensive to do that your payback on it ends up being 8-10 years from now. And that's not a good return on your investment, right? And so we are investors. So long-winded answer of, you have to be very strategic about how you're going to create this unique experience, what you're going to be doing to be able to bring this property to life. And it has to be across the board. I can't say, hey, listen, I've only got the budget to do one room and the rest of the property is going to be the same. It's funny. I can just literally, anybody that's listening, go on Airbnb, go into the Orlando market, and you will see this all over the place. You'll see, you'll see these, a castle bedroom, or you'll see a princess bedroom, and you'll see your Star Wars game rooms, and they're awesome. And then you go to the rest of the room and you're like, whoa, this is just a model home, right?
It took me one scroll to find.
It's rampant in that market, but it happens everywhere. And you have to be able to say, how can I spread my budget around, bring this property to life, but also get a really good return on it? We're always looking for, a 1-year payback, a 2-year payback. Maximum, I'll go a 3-year payback. I won't go more than that. If I have to invest $100,000, I better get paid back. It better increase my revenue at a minimum about $35,000 a year to be able to do that. Most people don't look at it that way. They just say, hey, listen, if you do this, this, and this, you're going to increase your revenue and you're going to compete at the top of the market. All of that is true. But what does that really mean? The bottom line, like that one that I was looking at, they're saying, hey, listen, go spend $250 to make an extra $25 a year. Wow. Never in a million years would I do that. Right. That makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Was it untrue what that person who was giving him the advice was telling him? No. They told him, listen, if you do this, you're going to jump to the top of the market. But what was never discussed is what does the top of the market actually look like? Mm. How much is the consumer actually paying in this market for these top properties? You know, and if their only solution is to spend that much money to get that extra gain, that's not a good return. And it's not a good way to play the game. And so you're going back to all of this. If I don't own the properties, I'm not even close to diving into these conversations. I'm not even diving deep enough to say, how fast am I going to get a return on that investment? So let's say I was an arbitrage guy or I was a co-host guy. And I said, hey, listen, I am willing to invest in it because it increases revenue. So let's say in my scenario, and I said, yeah, I told you, let's go create this immersive experience. Let's say it's going to cost you $50,000 and you're going to get a 2-year payback. So your revenue is going to increase by $25,000 every single year, right? So as an owner, I'm really excited about that, right? That's a 50% return on my investment. So as an owner, I'm saying I'll drop $50,000 to go make an extra $25,000 every single year all day long. It's 50%. No, it's hard to get a 50% return on any investment, right? So, but if I'm a co-host or arbitrage, let's say the co-host, because we are making, you know, 25 to 30%, maybe you're making 20%. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're making 25% on the gross revenue.
Okay.
So what's 25% of $25,000? It's $6,500.
$25,000. Yeah. Well, it's so sad. I have to do
$6,250. So that was close. $6,250. So now as I'm only getting I'm getting a percentage. I'm getting 25% of that $25,000. So as an owner, I'm willing to invest that $50,000. As a co-host, this is my point. They're not willing to, because they're saying, hey, listen, if I go drop the 50 and I increase my revenue by $6,250 every single year, it takes me 8 years to get paid back. That's not as attractive, right? It's nowhere near as good of a return on investment. Yep. So I have to rely on the owner that is willing to make those decisions. Co-hosts actually have that ability to do that. An arbitrage person, it's very, very difficult, because you're on the hook for it, right? You're doing that. And so you have to look and say, and that's why the gap continues to widen, because one, most owners aren't willing to have these conversations, right? Our listeners, we're preaching to the choir. Mm-hmm. They're trying to raise the bar. They're operating at a higher level, but most people aren't. This is a mom and pop business. So most owners aren't having that. I promise you, there's a lot of properties that the decisions are made by the co-hosts, and not as many on the arbitrage side anymore, unless you get into like the urban areas. Mm-hmm. Arbitrage is really popular still on apartment complexes, condos, in some of the urban centers.
Okay.
Co-hosting is much more popular on your homes and your vacation destination type of scenarios, right?
Okay.
It all sells courses. It's in reality, it doesn't produce a lot of inventory or supply out there. There's a lot of biz op people that will buy an arbitrage course because it's attractive. Hey, we're going to show you how to make money with other people's properties. You don't even have to do anything. You rent these properties out, you sublease it, you get the difference, you make all kinds of money, right? They go try to implement, they're like, okay, this might not work out the same way. So, but co-hosts are a different story, because you really have good co-hosts that are building decent businesses. It's a business model that can work out well as a cash flowing business model. And you can start to make some active income from doing it.
Right.
But you have to partner with the right owners. And a lot of the inventory out there is not willing to do what it takes to operate toward the top of the market. It's why the gap keeps widening. It's not because, you know, the top of the market is so much smarter and everything else. It's saying, hey, listen, I'm paying attention to the details of what it takes to operate toward the top of the market. I'm going to look and see how I'm going to get a return toward the top of the market. And I make those decisions that many of the people in the middle of the market are not even educated enough to make, because they're not spending the time to do that as an owner. But also most people rely on their property managers or their co-hosts to make the decisions for them. And they're not going to make those. They're not going to say, hey, listen, we need to do this, or they're not going to put their, you know, sign on the dotted line and put their money up front, because it's not a good return for them. So they're just going to say, hey, listen, we'll just get our fair share of business.
Right.
And that when
the gap's 80% widening.
Of your market is that's the decisions they're making. And if you're lucky, 20% of your market is starting to raise the bar. And I say lucky because a lot of people are like, yeah, it's kind of nice that it's nobody's up here. Like we can walk into, I always tell people it's not that hard for us to walk into the top 5 or 10% of almost any market. And that's pretty sad to be able to just like almost feel like we're, you know, confident that we can walk into the top 5 or 10%. I would love to say we're walking in the top 20% because I gave this example before when I had my Cherry Log case study. It was a 3-year long case study, very, very public. We went from zero to the number one revenue property in the market. Well, when we did that, it was a crowded enough market that other people thought, oh, this is the bar has been risen. We set a new high watermark. Well, guess what? People jumped us. And now the high watermark continues to get pushed, which is awesome. We're always still in the top 3 to 5. Mm. But what's happening is now we have not just one or two properties pushing the high watermark. We've got 15 or 20 that are pushing it. And so the whole market starts to raise and we all make more money. So I do like to see more people toward the top of the market. Unfortunately, it's hard to talk people into doing what it takes.
Wow, that's really interesting. I love how you broke it down with the percentages of the money. And that really made me think about knowing your numbers and underwriting properly. So I'm definitely going to put SCR DataSense in the caption or in the bios or link below. And then are we doing any webinars for this kind of thing?
Every Tuesday. Now we're on a Tuesday, Thursday schedule.
Live fantastic. Webinars. Sign up for the webinars, people. You're going to learn some amazing stuff. It's going to be fantastic, especially when it comes to this. And we kind of touched on return on investment here. Right. So I kind of want to transition and go right into the tax savings aspect of this. It's one of those levers that people can pull. And so we talked about now you're going to dump this money into your design costs and it's going to be fantastic. You're going to rise to the top and you'll make more money. It's fantastic, blah, blah, blah. But now there's another also portion of this when it comes to the tax savings at the end of the year. Can we touch a little bit? I'm sure many people have seen the ads. Many people have heard STR, short-term rental loophole. It's a huge thing. But why is it really important when it comes to the ownership model?
Yeah, because you can't do it unless you own the property, right?
Boom.
There's no tax advantages unless you own
Boom.
It, right? You're not going to be able to depreciate something unless you're an owner. And so you have to own it in order to have those tax advantages, right? There's a reason why even homeowners versus non-homeowners, renters versus, you know, you can write off your interest on your personal residence. You can't write off your rent on, when you're a renter, right? Mm. So there's a lot of advantages in the ownership model. Our tax laws have been written that way.
Right.
They've always tried to encourage ownership. And so you want to take advantage of that. And now I know we're in January. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are going to start writing tax checks for 2025 between now and April, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to start to see what they owe.
Right.
Some people rushed at the very end of last year to try to buy a property to mitigate their taxes and reduce their taxes. Guys, don't be the person that's trying to do this November and December. Think about this right now. It is the short-term rental tax loophole. Arguably is probably the best opportunity for average investors to be able to reduce their active income, but also use it to continue to accelerate and scale their portfolio,
right?
When you can buy a property and then supplement that next property, and then you do rinse and repeat, you supplement your next property, and you're not having to save up the entire down payment, the entire furnishing and setup costs on every single property, it really accelerates your progress.
Right.
And you're allowing Uncle Sam to really fund your portfolio. And that's pretty fun to be able to do when you really understand it. But it's a strategy you should be thinking about in January, in February, in March, really throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And so by the time you hit the fourth quarter, you've already got your properties in play.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're strategically thinking about the following year, right? And the next year. And so don't be the person that's like, okay, well, I missed it in 2025 or I'm going to need it. You know, I got it and I'm not going to worry about it now until the end of 2026. You don't know if you're going to find the right property. And you don't want to let, like Mike Pine always says, don't let the tax tail wag the investment dog, right? Understand what your buy box is. Be patient with your buy box and understand what your tax strategy is going to be so that you can really start to say, hey, listen, I'm buying quality properties in quality areas. I'm not under the gun. I'm not under a timeline like, hey, listen, I have to get this done tomorrow.
Right.
You know, we had somebody that was talking to us throughout the holidays, and they sold a property. They were doing a 1031 exchange. They have 45 days to identify, and they're literally still in the middle of, like, after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year, saying, yeah, we'll get to it after the first of the year, but we really need to have some guarantees that we're going to find something. And I'm like, no, you have zero guarantees from me. You are drug your feet for 30 days. You're telling me you're going to come in like this week, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have 1 week left to identify, and I'm supposed to solve all your problems. So your lack of planning is now put on me, and they're saying, well, if we write a check and come into your mentorship program, we want you to solve all of our problems. No, we're not going to do that. First of all, it's not the right people that I like to work with. I want to work with somebody who is actually proactive, who is saying, hey, listen, I'm willing to take some responsibility here, roll up my sleeves, not, hey, listen, I'm going to, you know, the holidays are here and I don't feel like doing anything. Well, too bad. You know, you miss out on it then. I don't know what to tell you. The same with taxes. You really, tax strategy needs to be thought about all year long, not in November and December.
Mm. Man, I'm getting fired up listening to this. Okay, I'm going to move on to our next point here. Okay. We talked about design. We talked about taxes. We can touch on some things. I want to really touch on the lifestyle asset advantage, because I think that's huge. I really do. I genuinely do. I think this is a huge portion where of people that are going to spend their money, this is another great return on investment. I know you talked about those four levers. In my opinion, I think like this is a fifth.
Yeah, it really is a fifth. 100%. I totally agree with you.
Okay. So let's go into what is the lifestyle asset advantage? Maybe, you know, we're preaching in the choir here, but maybe this is someone's first time listening. They don't know. Let's walk them through a little bit the lifestyle asset.
And I get shit for this all the time, because I say, listen, I won't buy properties that I don't plan on using. Mm-hmm. It is a huge lifestyle upgrade. When you have a portfolio of beach homes, mountain homes, desert homes, your city home, whatever type of home you've got, and you've got a portfolio of properties you can use. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you go have to use them all the time, but when you can use your properties, it is a significant lifestyle upgrade. Why do we buy wakeboard boats? Why do we go on vacations in general? Why do we buy stuff like toys, motorcycles, whatever toy, throw it out there. Why do we buy that stuff? Right. We buy it for the lifestyle. We buy it for the time we're going to spend doing it. And so what's any different than buying and building a portfolio? It's kind of like having your cake and eating it too. It's like, hey, listen, I'm looking for a quality portfolio that gives me cash flow, note pay down, appreciation, tax advantages, and then that fifth bonus of having a lifestyle asset and buying quality assets that I can use with my friends and family. That's a big upgrade that's not costing me a ton of money. Right. And so I think it is a massive upgrade that is overlooked. And I get made fun of all the time, because everybody's like, oh, no, I'm just an investor. Why do you give people advice on having to use their properties when you should be, you know, looking at all these other things? I look at all those things. Why not have all of them? Right. Why not do all of the above? And it's what got me interested in short-term rentals in the very beginning. In 2006, I was just turning 30 and I wanted the stuff. Right. I wanted things to use, and I was making some money, and I wanted to enjoy my money. And so sometimes you're always like, hey, listen, I got to be disciplined. I got to put my nose down. I got to start all these investments. The reality is most of the time, most of us don't do it. Mm. And we justify buying all those other things. Right. Mm. I can't tell you. I live in a nicer area, and I can't tell you how many $300,000-$400,000 wakeboard boats I see in every driveway. And I'm like, holy shit, you know, that to me is crazy. And I know people love to do that. It's great. Do you, right? I shouldn't say that like in a way, but for me, what I should say is those vacation homes pulled that same lever for me
satisfaction.
And it was a much better investment. It was a much better financial decision to be able to do that than buy this depreciating asset that was really expensive, but served a similar purpose. And it was worth, for many, many people, it's worth it to spend money on those things, right? Mm-hmm. I love the outdoors. I buy, you know, drift boats, and I buy trailers, and I buy motorcycles and stuff like that. No, that's no different. So, like, I shouldn't say it's crazy to me they buy that stuff. I do a similar thing. But it's when it comes to lifestyle assets and that lifestyle upgrade, it's a real thing. And right. it is something that kept me interested in this asset class early on, because when we bought our first cabin and we would hang out with some of our friends on the weekend and rent it out when we weren't there, mm-hmm. it was a pretty fun like experience to say, man, this is pretty sweet. Everybody thinks that we're pretty cool for having this second home and this cabin that we can all go use. But little did they know that somebody else was paying for it. Back then I was like, it was all about my ego and I wanted to show off and I acted like I had all the money in the world. And it was different. And it, but it served that purpose for me of having this toy, essentially, mm-hmm. right? A vacation home is kind of like, hey, listen, why not have the best of both worlds? And now that we've realized how to make it a really good financial investment, mm-hmm. plus a really big lifestyle upgrade in the meantime, while it's maturing and while it's appreciating and while it's getting paid off by somebody else, mm-hmm. The first 3 to 5 years, it doesn't feel like maybe a huge financial investment because you're not realizing some of the big gains that you're going to see down the line. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like a big lifestyle upgrade from day one.
Yeah. And I kind of want to hit on this too, that, we're talking about like you can go vacation at these properties, but I've heard it on talking to some people where they're looking for these properties, of course, for these four levers. And the fifth is maybe they have a kid that like went to college out of state, right? And they want to go visit their kid. Mm-hmm. So now they're going to buy a property in that college town area. And that way they get to visit with their kid. Yep. So maybe it doesn't have to be this like vacation thing, wakeboarding, skiing, but what if it's like draws you closer to your children? Or what if it draws you closer to a family member or whatever it is? Like that's also a huge portion of it.
Yeah, we always talk about the vacation home side of it. Mm-hmm. That happens all the time. Right. We have one of our members and they're empty nesters. Their kids have moved away. Mm-hmm. They stay home and they have three daughters, and they all move to the same area.
Right.
But the area is about 8 hours away from them. And so rather than going and staying with one of their daughters, they bought a home there. And it's not a traditional vacation home market, but it works well because there is actually a college there. There's a big medical center there. Their kids are all in medicine. That's why they all kind of ended up there. Mm-hmm. And so they bought a second home there. We set it up as a vacation rental. They rent it out, but now they've got kind of a home base. They feel mm-hmm. tied to the kids. And mm-hmm. for them, again, a big lifestyle upgrade because now they've got somewhere to go to go visit the family. Mm-hmm. And they don't feel like, they've got to impose with one of the kids when they go visit or anything else. And they love the fact that they've got a second home close to the rest of the family.
Mm. Okay. I kind of want to start wrapping up here. And I want to ask you this question about what should someone do? But do you want to touch on anything else before I ask this question? Do you want to touch on any other
portion? No, I think we've hit.
All right, well, let's do it. Let's ask it then, all right?
Okay.
We talked about upfront cost of the ownership model. Con for some people, right? Mm-hmm. So then the question becomes, what should the average person do? Should they go into co-hosting, kind of learn the ropes a little bit, try and save up a little money, and then go into this ownership model? Or should you just hunker down, save your money? What would you recommend someone do?
Yeah. So if I was interested in building a portfolio, an ownership model portfolio, short-term rentals, multifamily, commercial, I don't care what it is, you're going to have some money to get this property set up, buy it, everything else, right? And so you're saying, hey, listen, if I'm interested in short-term rentals, mm-hmm. what is my best opportunity to go into it if I don't have the money?
Right.
So one, we have an income and a savings problem. Right. Our investing problem is kind of in the future because we haven't invested yet. We don't have the money to invest. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm saying, should I just go into this to learn the ropes, everything else? The answer is maybe, maybe not. Mm. And the reason I would say that is you might be better off just doubling down on what you do for a living. What is your skill set? Where are you going to capitalize the fastest and the most and increase your income based on your current skill sets,
That's good.
So this is a side hustle.
Yeah, that's good.
Arbitrage co-hosting is a side hustle. You might say, hey, listen, I really am interested in this. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there, which I wouldn't disagree with you. Mm. I do think that there's opportunity to go build a co-hosting business. Mm-hmm. I would ignore the arbitrage. I think they're just not, the pros and the cons, in my opinion, the cons outweigh the pros in arbitrage. So I wouldn't be very interested in arbitrage. Co-hosting, I may be more interested in that mm-hmm. because I think that there is a business model there
right.
as the short-term rental world grows, because there is a need for management, right? Mm. And so that's what you are, right? Let's assume you're a management partner.
Yeah.
Is that the side hustle that you feel like you have the most leverage in? If you're going to spend, you're trading time for money still on right. both of those models, right. but you're trading time for money on anything active, right? Mm-hmm. And so if your current skill set allows you to go increase your income in other ways, mm-hmm. you might be best doubling down there. Mm-hmm. If your current skill set and you're kind of stuck where you're at and you're like, I don't really see any other opportunities, you're picking right. now mm-hmm. another side hustle that's probably unrelated to what you do. Mm-hmm. And you're interested in the short-term rental game, you want to get into it. The co-hosting model might be a good entry point to it because it's some extra active income,
right?
And you're really learning the model and you're really learning what it takes to succeed. Now, if I was going to run into the co-hosting model, I still would understand what it takes to succeed as an owner, right? And it's not because, let me take that back. That's not a good way to state that. I would figure out what it takes to succeed, period. Not as an owner. What you will find is the people who succeed are usually typically owners because mm-hmm. they're willing to invest into the property
right.
to create those unique experiences
yes.
for it to succeed. But as a co-host, I still need to know what mm-hmm. it takes to succeed at the top of those markets, because if I'm going to cut my teeth in this business, I better cut my teeth on learning how to operate at the top.
Mm. Okay, so then let me ask you this. Someone's thinking, man, I don't have the money, but I really want to do it. I want to co-host. I also have the sense of hospitality.
Right.
Maybe I'm extroverted. Maybe I actually like to talk to people. Maybe that's a thing, right? And they go, well, we know that Vodacy has like the top properties. You should reach out to us if you're looking to co-host? Is that a wise thing to say? Because we're always looking for property managers,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, why wouldn't you?
Okay.
You know, we've got arguably the top portfolio, collective mm-hmm. portfolio in it. Like, I don't think that there's even a close second as a collective portfolio in the U.S.
No.
I mean, the amount of number one revenue properties we have that continues to grow in, I don't even know how many it is at this stage.
It's wild.
Across the U.S. Yeah, mm-hmm. I would be reaching out to a group of owners and a collective portfolio that might be interested in this. I mean, how many top co-hosts do we have in our group?
True.
They started off in ownership and they own properties and they co-host.
Yeah.
They do both, right? They started off in the ownership and they're like, hey, listen, they were self-managers. Like, I really like this.
Yep.
This is a skill set I have.
And
many of them have grown some really nice companies on the co-hosting side that are doing amazing. But yeah, our acquisitions team, like, we're always looking for, you know, great management partners. We're always looking for really, across the board, finance, management, attorneys, lenders, like all these different things that we're always looking for. So absolutely, I'd reach out.
Yeah, I pull that up. Yep, we actually do. I can remember people's names who have done that. So, Well, hey, man, I just wanted to touch on that. Thank you guys for listening. That's all I have.
That's
all I have. 47 minutes in.
Nice. Good.
Thank
good
you guys.
Start to the new year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and also contact us. Okay.
Yeah. Reach
Go
out.
To the
ask web, questions too. Right. We love
support,
those questions.
Support at Vodacy.com. Yeah. Sign up for the webinars. You have underwriting and data analysis in the bio, in the description. Go click it. Send us your questions. Connect with us. It's huge. Come on now.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
We love hearing from you guys. Anything that we can do to get those questions answered, any topics you want us to discuss, even mm-hmm. if you're like, hey, listen, I don't really have necessarily a question. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear you guys' take on X, right? Mm-hmm. And whatever that X is, let us know and we'll get that question answered. Mm-hmm. We love hearing from you. And we've got some, we were just discussing before we hit record on some kind of maybe a little bit of a new format coming out for our Experts Corner.
Yes, sir.
Where we're going to dive into our 9-step process mm-hmm. a little bit more in detail mm-hmm. on where there'll be solo episodes where I'll do a little bit more training, almost workshop style training on some of these podcasts. So watch for that to come up. Again, we're trying to do our best to help everybody walk into this game with their eyes wide open. Nobody has all the answers, including me. But one of the things that we love that is different at Vodacy is our collective experience, our collective knowledge, and being able to share that with all of you and continuing mm-hmm. to expand on that is always our number one goal. And so we're going to try to share some of that stuff with you. So
I love it.
let's wrap it up today. You guys know I don't run ads or sponsorships. The only way the show grows is if you guys share it. So I would appreciate it if you share it with somebody else that you think might be interested in these conversations. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Cheers.
Cheers, babe.
Joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.